Court will proceed to the third case of the day, Bakarian versus Mukasey. Ms. Sanderson.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Kathleen Sanderson, and I am counsel for petitioner Mr. Bakarian. This morning, I'd like to focus your attention on only two of the issues that Mr. Bakarian raised in his opening brief. Both of these issues are relevant to Mr. Petitioner's argument that the immigration judge and the BIA erred in finding Mr. Bakarian not eligible for cancellation of removal. Because of these critical errors of law, we ask that this court remand this case to the immigration judge for the application of the proper legal standards in determining Mr. Bakarian's eligibility for relief under the INA. I'll start by setting forth a brief timeline of the undisputed facts. First, it is undisputed that Mr. Bakarian first entered this country as a non-immigrant in 1987. Second, it is undisputed that Mr. Bakarian became a lawful permanent resident in 1990 and then received a second lawful permanent residence number in 1993. Third, it is undisputed that Mr. Bakarian pled guilty to petty theft in 1996 when he stole something to eat and something to drink from a local store when he was homeless. And finally, it is undisputed that Mr. Bakarian was not served with a notice to appear until 2005, which was 18 years after he first entered this country as a non-immigrant.
Between 1996 and whenever, had he gone back to Russia? Had he returned to?
Between 1996
after 1996, yeah, that's supposedly when he became a permanent resident.
He became a permanent resident in 1990. 1996 is the date.
I'm sorry, when he committed the crime.
Correct. He testified at his hearing that he returned to Russia or the USSR twice for a 1 or 2 month period, both in 2000 and I believe in 2002.
Well, the evidence really wasn't all that clear on that point, though, was it?
No, the evidence was not clear on those points. Mr. Bakarian.
The immigration judge found it was pretty confusing on whether he went to Moscow to study and so on, so he didn't start the continuous clock running until 1990. That
one. Correct. The immigration judge found that Mr. Bakarian's testimony was unclear as to the dates that he entered prior to 1990.
And do you think it is clear that he was here permanently from 87 on?
I think what is clear is that he entered this country as a non-immigrant in 1987, and that the plain language of the statute and the precedents from the BIA has held that when determining a permanent residence, period of continuous residence, they can start that clock after the immigrant has been admitted into this country in any status. In the matter of Blancas Lara, the BIA specifically addressed this issue of the language of what in any status means. And it determined that in the case of a permanent resident, they could look to the date that they entered as a non-immigrant and start the clock date on that date. Further, the plain language of the statute sets forth the start date and the end date for when a alien's period of continuous residence starts and ends. There's no language in the statute that deals with absences throughout that time period. And in fact, if Congress had intended for absences to be of importance in this determination, it could have included a section in the statute that spoke to that issue. In fact, Congress did include a section in that statute that spoke to a non-permanent resident's absences in its period of determining its 10 years of physical presence in order to establish its eligibility for cancellation of removal. And in doing so, they set forth that certain breaks between 90 and 180 days broke the non-permanent resident's 10-year period of physical presence. But Congress failed to set forth, they did not set any language discussing what an absence, how an absence is relevant to a permanent resident's determination of its 7 years of continuous residence.
Can you explain this two different kind of numbers, apparently in 1990 and 93? I mean, by the way, I think you've done a superb job on taking this case, a pro bono case, and your brief is excellent. But I don't understand why there are these two different numbers, and is that some kind of a mix-up?
For when he became a lawful permanent resident?
Yes.
His father first applied for permanent residency on his behalf in 1990. He was granted permanent residency, came to this country. He then testify to the fact that he lost his permanent residency numbers. Mr. Bakarian is not fluent in English. He, throughout this whole process, he was not represented by counsel, and I believe he testified that he didn't know what to do when he didn't have his permanent residence number, and so he had his father resubmit a second application for permanent residency on his behalf, which the government granted, and issued him a second permanent residency number, even though he was already a permanent resident from 1990.
How does his Wisconsin convictions play into this if you were remanded, if the matter was remanded?
His Wisconsin convictions play into this, in our opinion, in importance, because the 2003 date should have been the date that the immigration judge ended Mr. Bakarian's period of continuous residence. Mr. Bakarian argues that the IJ and the BIA erred in impermissibly retroactively applying the stop time rule to Mr. Bakarian's period of continuous residence in deciding that his period of continuous residence ended in 1996.
Because of the convictions?
Because of his convictions, correct. However, and this is, in fact, an issue of first impression in this court, whether the stop time rule can be retroactively applied to a situation such as this. And the seminal case on retroactivity is Landgraf versus USI Film Products, which is a 1994 Supreme Court case, in which the Supreme Court articulated a two-step test for determining when a statute can be applied retroactively. The first step is whether Congress has given a clear indication that the rule is to be applied retroactively, and if the answer is no, this court can then move on to the second step, which looks specifically to this case, whether the rule has a retroactive effect. Under the first step, there's nothing in the stop time rule that clearly mandates the retroactive application of the rule to pre-IIR IRA conduct. And therefore, Congress did not give a clear indication that the law should be applied retroactively. As further evidence that Congress gave no clear indication that the law should be applied retroactively is that in other sections of the IIR IRA, which in particular the transitional stop time rule, Congress expressly stated that that rule should be applied retroactively, and they failed to do so for the permanent stop time rule. Both the Ninth Circuit in Cenotes Cruz and the Second Circuit in Zuluaga, in similar factual cases, have held that Congress did not give a clear indication that the stop time rule should be applied retroactively.
But why? I guess I'm still confused. Why wouldn't the 2003 felony forgery conviction and intimidating a witness conviction in Wisconsin be an independent basis for denying any sort of relief to the petitioner?
It would not be an independent basis because it was only one crime involving moral turpitude.
Well, just the forgery, not intimidating a witness.
Intimidating a witness was caused from, and it would not have existed had he not committed the first forgery crime. As he testified at the hearing, he had committed this forgery, and it was there later, at a later date, visiting friends at a residence owned by the victim of his forgery crime. And he attempted to speak to the victim, and the victim called the cops, and that resulted in a intimidating a witness or intimidating a victim conviction. And therefore, under rules that this court has held, that is only one crime involving moral turpitude and not two. And therefore, Mr. Bakarian, his stop time date should not have ended until 2003. So it would have an effect, but it wouldn't make him ineligible for cancellation of removal because he'd still be able to establish 7 years of continuous residence, and the cancellation of removal relief would waive that 2003 conviction. If Your Honors have no further question, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. Mr. O'Connor.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I am Blair O'Connor on behalf of the Attorney General. Your Honors, the instant petition for review should be denied because the agency properly found that Mr. Bakarian was ineligible for all of the forms of discretionary relief for which he applied. First, because he failed to establish the requisite 7 years continuous residence necessary for cancellation of removal, he is ineligible for that form of relief. Second, because he was convicted of two crimes involving moral turpitude, not arising out of the same single stream of criminal misconduct in 2003, which was 7 years following the repeal of Section 212C relief, he was ineligible for that form of relief. And finally, because he had not yet applied for, yet had approved, a new immigrant visa at the time of his last immigration proceeding, he was ineligible for adjustment of status. With respect to his eligibility for cancellation of removal, contrary to Mr. Bakarian's assertion, the immigration judge did not fail to take into account his admission as a non-immigrant in 1987 in determining whether or not he had the requisite 7 years continuous residence. The immigration judge's decision clearly noted petitioner's argument that his residence began, and I quote, in 1987 when he first visited the United States. Notwithstanding that, the immigration judge found that he did not continuously reside in the United States from that 1987 admission until August 3, 1996, which is the date of the commission of his second CMIT, because he had returned to the USSR several times from 1987 up until 1990 when he first entered as a lawful permanent resident. It is important to note here that petitioner first entered the United States in 1987 as a non-immigrant. And under the Immigration and Nationality Act, it defines a non-immigrant as an alien who has a residence in a foreign country which he has no intention of abandoning and who is visiting the United States only temporarily. Now, Mr. Bakarian apparently applied to the terms of his initial non-immigrant visa and left prior to that visa's expiration to return to the Soviet Union and continue his studies at an institute in Moscow. By definition, under the INA, therefore, he did not first enter the United States in 1987 with the intent of permanently residing here. He went back to the Soviet Union, continued his studies, and he first entered as a lawful permanent resident in 1990. Therefore, both the immigration judge and the board properly found that the period of continuous residence did not start until 1990. And because he committed his second crime involving moral turpitude in August of 1996, he failed to establish that requisite 7 years of continuous residence. Again, we, as was noted during petitioner's opening argument, furthermore, his testimony and the evidence presented regarding the status between 1987 and 1990 was very vague and contradictory, as the immigration judge noted. In his cancellation application, he indicated that first entry in 1987 and said he returned to the Soviet Union prior to the end of that year and that he did not come back to the United States until he was admitted the first time as a lawful permanent resident. It was only when he got to his testimony before the immigration judge and that 7 continuous years became a critical issue that for the first time he started to allege, oh, no, I stayed in the United States for 6 or 7 months, went back to Russia for only a month, and then came back as a non-immigrant a second time sometime in 1988. But the immigration judge asked DHS counsel to do a thorough check of its records and see if it had any indication of a second entry as a non-immigrant after 1987, and there was no such evidence that the DHS counsel could find. Furthermore, Mr. Bakarian didn't present any evidence in the form of a second visa, a second non-immigrant visa, or a stamp in his passport to show any entry between 1987 and 1990. Therefore, again, because this court reviews the issue of continuous residence under the compelling evidence standard, and this record fails to compel the conclusion that he had 7 years continuous residence, his denial of cancellation removal should be affirmed. With respect to the retroactivity argument, again, the government first asserts that that issue is not presently before this court because petitioner failed to exhaust his administrative remedies by not arguing retroactivity of the stop time rule before the board. Now, in the reply brief, a petitioner argues that exhaustion can be waived in this instance because any attempt to do so would have been futile, but the government submits that argument lacks merit because, as both the Ninth Circuit noted in Cenotes Cruz and the board subsequently noted in its decision in matter of Urrea, because Perez, which is the initial decision from the board saying that the stop time rule can apply retroactivity, because that decision predated the Supreme Court's decision in St. Cyr, aliens could have argued the board asked them to reconsider Perez and argue that St. Cyr essentially overruled Perez. That's what the alien exactly did in matter of Urrea, which was decided after the board's decision in this case. Therefore, exhaustion was not futile. It was an issue that petitioner was required to bring to the board, and his failure to do so prevents this court from considering it. Assuming that exhaustion could be waived, though, the retroactivity challenge still should be denied for lack of merit, because the only form of relief that the stop time rule would have applied to would have been petitioner's eligibility for suspension of deportation, and that was the pre-arrera form of cancellation of removal. However, he was ineligible for that form of relief because as a criminal alien, instead of establishing 7 years of continuous physical presence, he was required to establish 10 years of continuous physical presence after the date of the commission of his crime. Therefore, at the time he committed that second CMIT in August of 1996, that would have started a new 10-year physical presence clock instead of ending a 7-year one. Therefore, there's no way at the time he committed that act he could have done that with the reliance that he would somehow still be eligible for suspension of deportation. Because there was no reliance interest, the retroactivity argument fails and should be rejected. In the opening brief, petitioner also alleges that even assuming that the stop time rule would apply, that he could then continue to accrue a second period of continuous residence after the date of his second crime involving moral turpitude. The court need not even resolve that issue because even assuming, and we argue that the board properly found in matter of Mendoza that the stop time rule does not allow for the accrual of a second period of residence, but even assuming that it could, he could not establish that because the second period of residence would not have started on August 4th, 1996, but instead would have started in 2000. The reason being is that under the cancellation statute, an alien must establish 7 years continuous residence after being admitted in any status. And his next admission to the United States in any status was in 2000. So that is when a second period of continuous residence would have started. Because that period would have ended either on November of 2003, when he committed his fourth crime involving moral turpitude, or in 2005, when he was served with a notice to appear, again, he cannot establish a second period of continuous residence, and the court should reject that argument.
Just curious, does continuous residence time include time you're in actual like custody of a state for committing a crime?
Your Honor, off the top of my head, I'm not aware of a decision that directly addresses that, but my supposition would be that I guess it would not matter. I mean, again, you look at residence starts upon the admission in any status. So as long as you do have a lawful admission and that is not terminated because you either left the country or what have you, that I think that it can continue to accrue.
Well, so if you were, let's say somebody was admitted to this country in 1990, and in 1995 committed some crime and spent 3 years in prison, got out, and now we're in 2001. So if you were to include that time he was in custody, he would be over the now 10-year limit.
I understand, Your Honor. I actually want to qualify my response. Actually, if the crime he committed in 1995 under your hypothetical, if that was an enumerated crime under the stop time rule, if it's a crime involving moral turpitude and under the stop time rule, then that period of time would stop in 1995.
Immediately it stops.
Yes.
The clock doesn't restart anew. It starts anew, but not doesn't pick up the old time.
No. Again, and our argument is that doesn't even start anew. As both the board and every circuit to have addressed the board's decision in matter of Mendoza has agreed that once time stops, it stops permanently.
Okay, so it doesn't restart.
It doesn't restart.
Never restarts.
It doesn't restart. Yeah, I want to make clear that we are not conceding that it can restart. Okay. We're just arguing that the court need even not even get to that issue because even assuming that it could, here he still can't establish a second period of seven years. So. With respect to petitioner's eligibility for 212C waiver, again, we argue that he is not eligible for that because he was convicted of two crimes involving moral turpitude in 2003. In his reply brief, he appears to concede that both forgery and intimidating a witness are crimes involving moral turpitude. There's a decision both from the 11th Circuit and the board that said crimes that deal with an attempt to cover up a crime as intimidating a witness would, that is a crime involving moral turpitude. In the reply brief for the first time, he challenges that they're not two crimes that arose out of They're two crimes that arose out of the same scheme of criminal misconduct. The court should reject that argument because these were two distinct offenses committed against two different victims. The forgery offense was committed against the husband. The intimidating a witness offense was committed almost 2 months later against the husband's wife when he threatened to kill her at the hotel that she owned that he was staying at. Those are clearly two distinct offenses. He had time to reflect upon his forgery conviction. The intimidating a witness did not flow from or it was not a natural consequence of the forgery conviction. Those are two separate CMITs. He pled guilty in 2003 because that was well after the repeal of 212C. He was not eligible for that form of relief. And finally, with respect to his due process challenge, again, we would argue that that claim does not get off the ground because as this court held in Hamden, which is dispositive of this case, in order to predicate a due process interest in immigration proceedings, you must have a liberty or property interest in the outcome of those proceedings. Here, all of the forms of relief he is applying for, cancellation of removal, and a 212C and 212H waivers were purely discretionary forms of relief. He had no liberty or property interest in those. Therefore, he cannot predicate a due process interest in this case. Even assuming that he did have one, he hasn't established that any due process is denied because the immigration judge specifically granted him a continuance to apply for adjustment of status. And he did present an affidavit from his father. He was given an opportunity. The father didn't shed any new light on his residence. Therefore, he hasn't demonstrated how his due process was denied him. We respectfully ask the court to deny the petition for review. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. O'Connor. Ms. Sanderson.
I would like to start by pointing out that Mr. Bakarian only needs to be found eligible for one of these forms of relief, and you only need to find on his favor on one of all of these issues in order for this to be remanded back to the immigration judge to apply the proper legal standards. Second, Mr. O'Connor put a lot of emphasis at the beginning of his argument on the facts of this case and the factual standard in that there was not substantial evidence on this record to prove that he was continuously resident in this country for 7 years. However, Mr. Bakarian is not contesting any factual determinations that the immigration judge made. Mr. Bakarian is contesting that the immigration judge applied the incorrect legal standards to those factual determinations in making a legal conclusion. Finally, Mr. O'Connor also pointed out that he was admitted as a non-immigrant in 1987, and he read the definition of a non-immigrant and the fact that as a non-immigrant, you don't reside in the United States. However, the BIA has held that despite that definition of non-immigrant in the INA, a non-immigrant's date, the date that you come in as a non-immigrant, can start the clock for continuous residence. He also ignores the plain language of the statute, which says after having been admitted in any status. Mr. Bakarian was admitted as a non-immigrant in 1987, and under the plain language of the statute, that starts his clock for continuous residence. Further, under the plain language of the statute, his clock of continuous residence did not end until 2003, taking into account also the retroactive argument, when he committed his first crime involving moral turpitude after the IRA was enacted. Further, Mr. O'Connor's argument that we'd failed to exhaust our administrative remedies. This court has carved out four exceptions to the rule that a petitioner must exhaust all administrative remedies, and one of those exceptions is when appealing through the administrative process would be futile because the agency is biased or has predetermined the issue. Further, this court has held that a predetermined statutory interpretation by the BIA, which was contrary to the relief sought by the petitioner, would have rendered petitioner's requested relief futile. In both the matter of Perez, the BIA 1999 decision, and matter of Robles-Urrea, BIA 2006 decision, the BIA held that the stop-time rule could be applied retroactively. This therefore made any argument that it would have been futile before the BIA. And therefore, this court should address the issue as to whether or not the stop-time rule can be applied retroactively in this situation. Further, I'd like to point out that in Mr. O'Connor's retroactive argument, he put a lot of emphasis, and this is one of the factors that the Ninth Circuit has set forth in determining whether it would have an impermissible retroactive application in this case, and that is whether the petitioner or Mr. Bakarian could rely on a form of relief prior to have pled guilty, prior to have pleading guilty in 1996. Mr. O'Connor puts forth this argument that he was only eligible for suspension of removal. But prior to the IRA being enacted, there were two forms of relief that an alien in Mr. Bakarian's situation could have sought. One was suspension of removal, which Mr. O'Connor discussed in length. The other is a waiver of deportation under Section 212C of the INA. That waiver of deportation was adjusted under the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act of 1996, in which it restricted the number of immigrants that could qualify for that waiver of deportation. But even under AEDPA, ruled the time period in which Mr. Bakarian committed his offenses of petty theft, Mr. Bakarian is still eligible because his two crimes involving moral turpitude happened more than 5 years after he was a resident in this country. And finally, Mr. O'Connor's argument on due process focuses primarily on substantive due process, in which Mr. Bakarian is not arguing that the immigration judge violated his substantive due process rights. Mr. Bakarian's arguing that he violated his procedural due process rights, which is an argument that Mr. O'Connor did not address in his reply brief. If Your Honor, I have no further questions, I'm finished.
Okay, apparently not. Thank you, Ms. Sanderson. Mr. O'Connor. Ms. Sanderson, I...